PSNY.
We've been going.
We have been going. Yeah, you guys just missed the whole conversation about haircuts. This is just like the street the Yankees play on, Bleacher Creatures episode 161, brought to you as always by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. And back in the studio with us, in case you heard him from the start, James Kelly, welcome back.
I am back regularly, hopefully.
We're thinking every other week James is going to be back. He's not doing anything except sitting in this remarkably wood paneled room.
Dude, if I had a dollar for every time that came up on a podcast when I was doing it with Allison, man, I could have moved to Iowa. I could have taken that job.
it's a compliment, dude. Like, I'm honestly jealous, because I mean, New York City apartment living. I mean, look, you've been there before. Yeah. The walls all kind of look the same. It's kind of like, it's like being in college instead of a state prison, it's club fed.
Oh yeah, my freshman year dorm room was absolutely disgusting when I went to college, and it was made more disgusting by the clear line of demarcation between myself and my roommate's side. My side, like, I'm not like a clean freak, but right. Like, I try to keep, you know, I'll just throw clothes in the laundry, I'll leave shoes by the door, whatever, but like, I'm not gonna just leave them on the floor all over the place. No, there was a clear line of demarcation right down the middle, and all his shit was all over the place right up until that line. And at least he was respectful of the line, so I gotta respect that.
Where'd you go to undergrad again?
Geneseo.
Oh yeah, wow, three upstate New York guys here. I love it,
dude. It's a different world up there, man.
It's really the best kind of different world.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I have some pretty salty feelings about upstate New York right now.
Okay, well, we should do you want to get into all the layoffs happening at the Athletic? Yeah,
hold on. Let's not get me sued, okay? Because there may or may not have been an NDA on my way out that I had to sign.
Okay.
So let's not get me sued.
Well, look, we're not going to name names. We can just decry the state of the industry, because I'll use the term veterans of it in some capacity. Mm-hmm. We've all taken our lumps.
Oh yeah. Everyone has in this business, at least.
Yeah. This is not to say that Bleacher Creatures is delving into political territory. We are not all of a sudden embracing this leftist pro-union agenda, like, even though writers should be unionized like they are in the BWAA. Absolutely. We are just talking about a shared experience and how it is lather, rinse, repeat, and how you talk about wanting new blood in this industry, and yet nothing changes. It's Alec, like we talked about last week, it's the NHL Old Boys Club, retread after retread.
Yeah, it's like, once you've been in the industry for a while, you're never going to leave it, no matter how many times you get laid off. Like, how many times, like, how often do we see the announcements on Twitter of well-respected writers being like, either, like, you know, from ESPN or The Athletic or whatever, being like, yeah, well, I never thought this was going to happen, but I just got laid off. And everyone's like, oh, we're so sorry, you're going to land on your feet again. And then they do. And then 8 to 12 months later, it's the same exact thing.
Right. Now I'm weighing in on this as one of the lucky ones. I got to Bleacher Report back when anyone could write there. The higher ups thought my stuff was good enough to play. They put me on the payroll. It was a good 2.5 years. I then took a couple of years off, parlayed that into some work with Forbes, Fansided, and I've managed to stick around. And I'm very thankful and grateful for that. But James, you know, you and Alec, you too, you know better than anyone. Like, James, I think you yourself said, I think it was a comment I made about, maybe it was Jim Bowden at The Athletic, believe it or not, talking about how the Yankees should trade for, of all people, MJ Melendez. You went out there and said, Jim Bowden is an MLB, like, whatever, getting paid crazy amounts of money while you and I are sitting here having actual takes.
Yeah, and I do that with WFAN all the time, because obviously, yeah, I can't listen to it. I can't, because I sit there, and it's not just that the callers are absolutely insane, which they are, but truly some of the most unhinged people I've ever listened to in my entire life. calling into WFAN, including Anthony Volpe's dad, probably.
I mean, let's just put it out there. New York sports fans calling into radio shows, that's the original Twitter.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Exactly. And but now we like have Twitter, so we can share those clips around, so I don't feel like I'm missing anything. Like I used to get all of Mike Francesa's clips just DM'd to me. It'd be like, you believe what Francesa said today?
I
like,
used to try and call into Francesa.
Dude, it's impossible. And I have just lost my train of thought completely based on just getting mad at WFAN. But I sit there and I think Brandon Tierney is the one that comes up a lot for me,
Keith?
Especially with baseball. No, I like Keith a lot. I really like Keith. I think he is a smart fan, but I think he's kind of limited by the fact that his show is all callers. Right. He can only go as far as the callers take it. There's no co-host. It's just him.
Well, Keith is also, I think, just a perfect textbook example of my little baseball conspiracy theory that there is something in the water coolers at WFAN. Because like you said to yourself, like you like Keith, he's a smart fan. He himself has been good to you. But at the same time, he goes to WFAN.
There are things that I disagree with that he says on air. Plenty of things I disagree with. But, you know, I don't then call into the show right after and be like, Keith, you fucking idiot. How dare you say that? No, come on. Like, he's just doing his job. But that's the thing with WFAN is I look at it and I look at this group right here and I say, these are three people right here who know ball. We know baseball. We look into the stats. We look into the stories. We try to figure things out because not only is it our job, but it's what we've done for our whole lives. We love it.
Yeah.
And then you listen to some of these guys who are getting paid, you know, six digits to be on New York sports radio, sometimes even more if you're a premier show. And you think, like, why isn't somebody I know in that spot? Like, this is just reactionary takes. Like, you've gone off the deep end where you're no longer actually talking about sports. You're just garnering clicks. And I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that so much because it's not a sustainable way to, like, build yourself up as a person, especially the people like us who had to take the long road to get there. We didn't come out of Syracuse and get a job right away, Northwestern, whatever. We had to take the long road to get there. We've taken a lot of lumps on ourselves, and we've been poor as shit.
Yeah, and not just that. Kind of, like, that whole thing you mentioned about with WFAN guys coming in and out, it kind of makes you think about what the Packers were going through recently with Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love, where last few years, you look at Rodgers' numbers, you look at a much cheaper rookie in Jordan Love, and you realize, okay, he's going to give me pretty much those same numbers, but I don't have to pay him $40 million a year.
Mm-hmm. That's the crux of it all.
Like I will say right now, WFAN, you want me to come to a show, I will gladly do a show for, I'll throw my number out there right now, $65,000 a year, I will do a show.
I will too. We can host the show together. We'll split the 60 though.
No. $65,000 a piece for the three of us. like, oh God.
Where do I sign?
Sign me up right now.
And I'll do you one better. You can put in the contract that you can have Joe Beningo on not once, but twice a week to ramble about how much he hates the Mets.
Yeah. And then we can shit on him. I mean, it's fair criticism nowadays, but
dude, anyone who grew up in the tri-state area or has relatives from the tri-state area, Joe Beningo is that uncle.
Yeah.
He is that uncle who, like, he's probably watching the Yankees right now and saying, like, fire Boone, fire Cashman. Now, actually, you know, let's shift right into the Yankees because, oddly enough, while I don't fully agree with that take, I'm just going to share this tweet I put out from the weekend against the Red Sox. Now, I'll admit this is kind of me at my Yankees Twitter worst.
I've seen you at your Yankees Twitter worst. I've had to talk you off the ledge a couple times.
Okay, so this is from Friday night. I believe the score was 2-0 at this point. I wrote, Garrett Cole cannot do this by himself. If only his team's lineup, which still features two former MVPs and a two-time batting champion, even without Aaron Judge, didn't plummet to minor league levels without the captain. The Yankees are the most pathetic, good, in quotation marks, team in baseball.
Honestly, I feel like that's fair right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
And you've heard me rant about this many times, Josh, but it's just the most frustrating thing about this team is the gaslighting from the front office that's telling us that this is a team that's going, that they'll figure it out, that they will take that next step that has eluded them for the past five fucking years. Now, like I was at the Phillies game with my buddy yesterday and we're looking at like some of the lineups that some guys are hitting there, you know, it's like Cody Clemens hitting 265 for the Phillies. And I just look at him and go, man, it would be nice to have a 260 hitter in that Yankees lineup right now. Because because it seems like everyone's hitting below 200 or 220.
Yeah, I mean, like the biggest problem independent of Aaron Judge. Now, let's compare recent absences. Now, the Yankees, when they've lost Judge before, 2019, juice balls, that's an anomaly. 2018, that's more indicative of just how much he actually means to the team. As same with the shortened 2020 season that was shortened. The greater problem is that it seems that whenever Aaron Judge goes down, the rest of the lineup just falls asleep. And the problem now is that without Aaron Judge, the Yankees lineup on paper, it's in pretty good shape. It's like I said, you have two former MVPs, Josh Donaldson and Giancarlo Stanton. You have DJ LeMahieu, two-time batting title. Now, DJ, I'm going to give credit where it's due in the Red Sox series. He's starting to turn a corner. More hard contact. And if you look at his numbers, his problem, apart from increased strikeouts, BABIP. You can make hard contact, but it's no good if it goes in the glove. But no one else is performing. Anthony Rizzo is clearly still injured. Giancarlo Stanton, streaky as always. And Gleyber Torres, well, he's Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, but like, you know, when we talk about two former MVPs and stuff like that, it's just like, unfortunately, they're not the kind of player like that anymore. Like Josh Donaldson has. Yeah, they're not that guy.
Right. They're not. Okay. Let me expand on that then. No one is saying that Josh Donaldson should be the prime bringer of rain, but the fact is he's hitting the best right now. Seems that if he's not making it out, he's launching a home run like 400 plus feet. So the bat speed at a minimum is still there. The greater issue is that Anthony Rizzo is a shell of himself. Stanton clearly is still a little rusty. But it's like Alex said, like, these are not hitters that are built to survive without protection in the lineup.
You know, I was having a conversation with my dad today. And us being Man United fans, we were bemoaning the fact that Man City had just secured the treble.
The Champions League, yeah.
The Champions FA Cup, and yeah. So he was giving me the recap of the game because I wasn't watching. He goes, and he says, you know, Man City were on their last legs, but they just relied on the muscle memory of being winners to carry them through the final 10 minutes to secure the title. Yeah. And I had me thinking about all my New York teams that have given me agita over the past 5 years between the Giants, the Yankees, the Rangers.
Just a reminder, Peter Laviolette's getting the job.
I don't want to talk about that. And I think that's been probably the biggest thing that I never could identify it, but I think that was a really good point that my dad just kind of threw out there without even realizing it, is a team like the Yankees, they've lost that muscle memory of being able to win. You know, even when everything kind of goes against the team, or if they lose the big guy in Judge, or, you know, pitchers aren't quite performing at the level they're supposed to, and hitters are struggling and fighting against it, they've lost that ability to just find a way to win.
Well, you're talking about the problem that's eluded them for long, and that, of all people, Aaron fucking Hicks and R2C2, this Yankees lineup does not have any fuck you in it. It just doesn't.
It hasn't for years. Years.
It shows up. It hasn't had it consistently for years. It shows up in pockets.
Yeah, but I mean, that's mostly Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton being hot at the same time, and Anthony Rizzo. Like, it's replacement guys who, you know, aren't good hitting well. Like, this is a hot streak. It's not who you are. That's the Yankees for years have had just zero identity whatsoever. They're a boring team to watch.
They've been a
good team, but like, I don't like watching Yankees games. Like, it's not a fun experience because of the whole Yankees tradition shit.
Just look at the Red Sox whenever Rafael Devers or whoever hit a home run. They had those little golden inflatable barbells that you put them in. Everyone's kind of like giving each other a pound. The Angels have the samurai helmet for Ohtani.
We haven't had that since Thumbs Down. That was the last time.
No. That we had the parrot stuffy with Edwin Arcanacion.
Yeah, that was kind of a bit that he took with him, though.
Yeah, Yeah, that's true. That's a journeyman bit, but there's but you're absolutely right. There's no organic bit. Now, granted, that's the main importance of this, is that if any gimmick like that has to happen naturally. Now, and the Yankees, in fairness, they have theirs behind the scenes. Like, after the game, everyone, like, player of the game gets this pro wrestling belt. Or with, like, the Rangers, someone gets the hat after the game. Right. Yeah, so there is a little tradition that, but there's nothing public for the fans to grab onto. The Yankees, to paraphrase the Angels again, the Yankees don't have their rally monkey.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
they never have.
I think the biggest insult that you could say about the Yankees isn't that they're bad. It's just they're mediocre. They are just a mediocre team without Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
That was the signifier I was looking for right there. Without Aaron Judge, asterisk.
Yeah.
Big asterisk. With Aaron Judge, very good team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That isn't to say, like, the Yankees knew exactly what they were getting into when they gave him that record-setting contract. They knew Aaron Judge might get hurt. Even if, like, he had been an Iron Man for his entire career prior to that, giving someone that much money, you are assuming the risk they're going to get injured. And if you're going to have a player like Aaron Judge, who's that important to the team, you'd better fucking make sure that the rest of the team is fully aware. Hey, we got to know how to win without this guy.
And that's the most frustrating part, right? You can't even blame Aaron Judge for the injury he had.
Absolutely not.
You can't blame him for most of the injuries he's had. Most of them have been those freak, like, got hit in the wrist by a pitch, rolled his ankle going for a fly ball or diving, whatever. And he's even scaled back on that kind of stuff. And CC Sabathia said it too. He was like, Judge, stop. I get it. Like, you want to make the play? Stop, dude. We need you for 162. All right?
Yeah.
And now this is going crashing through the gate at Dodger Stadium. Like, don't do that, first of all, Aaron. Like, we don't need that. We talked about it. We're not going to do that anymore. But, like, we lose him for a month because he makes the play of the year. And by the way, the guy got second base.
Yeah.
What a bullshit call that was. It was like, he's out of play. Give him second base. He crashed through the damn bullpen gate.
Yeah. Build a stronger fence.
Yeah. Like, I get, because like, I looked this up. Or wait, no, I didn't look up. Somebody told me, like, the whole point of the rule is that, okay, if it's one of those, like, Derek Jeter plays where you acknowledge you are going to voluntarily fall into the stands and have to pick yourself back up, in that case, okay, the runner gets a free base. But he literally ran through, he loop caged himself through the wall.
Yeah, he was just gonna run right into the wall, make the catch, maybe take a little bruise on the right shoulder, and it's all good. It's all good. Aaron Judge is fine. He didn't realize that the gate was gonna be made of paper.
That said, oddly enough, one of my brothers is pretty sure he's had the same toe injury as Judge. Now, granted, he did not crash through a wall suffering it. He was like, oh, like I tripped on the sidewalk, essentially stubbed my toe. But he said, according to him, like, based on, like, because he was hurting enough that he went to the hospital.
Mm.
And so he said, based off his own experience as a non-professional athlete, he was like, I felt fine in 10 to 14 days. So maybe the Yankees are playing his injury close to the chest for that very reason. We can certainly hope so. But that doesn't take away from the main point. This is a lineup that still has Anthony Rizzo, Giancarlo Stanton, Josh Donaldson, DJ LeMahieu, who, even though they're not in the primes of their careers anymore, they're still capable of playing at a very high level. And all of a sudden, Aaron Judge is gone, and they vanished with him. It's fucking infuriating.
Yeah, I don't know if DJ still has that level in him, to be honest. I don't, like, I'll take 115 weighted runs created plus from DJ.
I would be
thrilled with that. That's great. But I think, at this point, it's kind of becoming clear, like, hey, DJ's best days are behind him. He's got some injury concerns cropping up pretty regularly. There's no more juiced ball. He's not getting a little extra power boost for going the opposite way in Yankee Stadium.
If DJ LeMahieu can't be expected to, or can't be relied upon to consistently hit, let's say, between 260 and 270, he's Mark Teixeira for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, except with less power.
Yeah, that's even worse.
Can't even run into one. At least Gary Sanchez ran into a few.
Speaking of Gary Sanchez donning Aaron Judge's number, and all of a sudden he is Aaron Judge on the Padres.
I love it. I love it.
You're How many home runs does he have right now?
I've never been more excited to be a Gary Sanchez fan right now. Like, I stuck with him for so long because I was like, we've seen it. Just do it. And he just never did for the Yankees. And I mean, he got off to a pretty good start with the Mets this year, too. Didn't play a lot for them. Only played a couple games. But he hit well for them, too. And now he's coming alive for the Padres.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Yankees are somehow – look, they've kind of, for all intents and purposes, held serve because they're playing essentially 500 balls since Judge went down. It's all because of the pitching staff. Like, I'm surprised we haven't seen more from Yankees Twitter about, oh, fire Aaron Boone, promote Matt Blake.
I think they gave up on firing Aaron Boone. I think they just gave up. And they're like, it's never going to happen, guys. Let's pack it in.
Yeah, like that's
I don't know if I can blame Boone.
No, Boone has made his usual handful of bullpen mistakes this year, which hindsight being 2020, maybe weren't the worst decisions, just given how much he's had to lean on his relievers this year. But if there's one thing about the Yankees, though, like, Alec, you say it all the time, college arms, international draft, no matter how frustrating this team's lineup is, the pitching staff is going to make us hold on for hope and keep us in this abusive relationship.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is, an abusive relationship.
Now I think we're talking about the Knicks.
Whoa.
I think we're talking about every New York sports team, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a shame that everybody separates.
Just yet another Yankees reminder, Alec, that Peter Laviolette is going to be the Rangers' next coach.
Stop.
Why?
I grew up rooting against the fucking dude because he was the head coach of the Capitals.
And the Flyers and the Predators. The Flyers,
yes.
He's a
journeyman. He hasn't done shit in the last decade. He's another retread. So, I mean, fuck. You want to talk about like one of the best sports in hockey and one of the worst leagues? Come on. Anyway, this is a baseball podcast.
Yeah, I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. Although, hey, upside, we may be getting Carlos Rodon soon.
Yeah, so he's going to one more off the mound session and then he's going to start getting into games. Is that what the report was?
So he's been doing a live BP. I think that's what they were doing when he drilled Willie Calhoun the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he was facing live hitters and I think they want to have him do that one more time and then they'll send him down on a rehab assignment. So then, and Boone said his velo was running 93-96 yesterday.
I feel like it could be a little faster.
What was he sitting at before he got hurt?
In my mind, I saw him sitting at like 94, 95 and then getting up to like 97.
Well, in the one spring training start he had where he got rocked, I remember his velocity was considerably down.
Yeah, I got to look it up. Yeah, because he was hurt.
Yeah. So like, I think that one, he wasn't topping out maybe more than 94, but if he can run between 94 and 96 for the Yankees, he should be okay. Plus he's still ramping himself up. He's probably got like another 2 to 3 weeks before he's even like making his first start.
I can't believe we even have Carlos Rodon. I feel like I've said this the whole time. Like people just forgot Carlos Rodon is on the Yankees because he just hasn't been around.
Yeah. And I did a deep dive on his numbers, man. Even, like when the Yankees were first even kind of looking at him, I remember I looked at his splits, not just like in Yankee Stadium, but just against the entire AL East and not just the AL East, both against the Astros and in Minute Maid Park specifically. This guy, it's near shutdown numbers against some of those teams. Like this guy can handle Yankee Stadium. He, like as CeCe said, he's got that fuck you in him. So maybe if he's in the rotation, just sort of becomes like the sort of like even angrier sidekick to Gerrit Cole. Maybe that'll spark the rest of the lineup and be like, oh shit, we better hit or else Carlos is going to be pissed.
I still can't believe as a team we're in a position where we're still looking for a number two starter with Carlos Rodon, Luis Severino, Nestor Cortes Jr. all on the roster currently. And we still can't find like a lockdown number two.
I mean, Nestor, like I'm not too worried about him just because looking at what he's been saying about his injury, plus all the innings he's racked up, he's just tired.
Yeah. But I never saw Nestor as the real number two anyway. I saw him as a better Jordan Montgomery, for instance. But if he's your fourth starter, you're fucking thrilled.
I'd even call him like a mid-tier three.
I would too. But when you have Rodon and Luis Severino behind Gerrit Cole, you're looking at it and saying, well, if Nestor Cortes Jr. is number four, like, we're in a really good spot right now.
Is this the part where you want to defend Luis Severino, even though he has had pretty much nothing his last two starts?
I'm just scared that he's hurt again.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. When the velocity is that down, your first thought is always the elbow. But yeah.
Also, for the record, just go back to Carlos Rodon because it finally loaded. 2022, 95.5 on the average fastball.
It's not bad.
It's pretty good.
All right, so between 93 and 96, okay, he's still ramping up.
Yeah, and that's fine. Take all the time you want because, again, like, we do this all the time. We work in media. We have to put out content. We have to talk about things.
Yeah.
But it's easy to forget that you have to also take a step back and be like, listen, Yankees are in a wild card position. The division's gone. The AL East is gone. The Rays are winning the AL East.
I am not at all convinced that the Rays are winning the East.
Without Aaron Judge for a month, maybe.
If Aaron Judge is in fact gone that long,
if he's missing extended periods of time, there's just no way we're going to catch up to the Rays. And you know what? That's okay. It's fine. It's fine because you're going to get into the postseason. You'd like to have that bye. It would be great to have that bye. But at the end of the day, the Phillies were in the World Series last year. They were the sixth seed.
And the Yankees
just have to get in and get hot.
And the Yankees have twice the pitching as the Phillies did.
Oh, yeah. The Phillies are bad this year.
I'm going back to the Rays. Alec and I are in a group chat from an old job we had. Apparently, there are some rumors about the Rays that if Sternberg it doesn't make any progress on a new stadium by the end of this season, it's Montreal time.
I still can't believe that they even proposed splitting time between Tampa Bay and Montreal.
What a dumbass idea that was.
Like, that's so stupid.
I think Lindsay Adler, this was when she was still at the Athletic, before she went to the Wall Street Journal. I think it was either her or Emma Bocelleri who tweeted something like, these ball players already need special accounts because they need to declare their income in multiple states just from road games. Imagine if they were splitting a season between the United States and Canada.
Like the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, the Toronto Blue Jays are a little different just because that's more of like a hockey scenario where it's like, okay, it's expected you're going to be on the road for a bunch. But when you are playing essentially half your home games in Florida and the other half in Canada, that's where it gets complicated.
Yeah.
Because you have to establish residence in two places in two separate year, in like the same year.
Yeah, it's not great. And that was a stupid suggestion from the jump. I mean, I love Montreal as a baseball town. I think if we were to put a team, I'd like it to be an expansion team, honestly. I'd like it to be, you know, maybe I would say Vegas, but it seems like that's already taken care of now.
Oh, but they don't have the votes.
Yeah, that's a weird situation. I'm having a hard time just keeping up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because the last I checked, the whole motion was to, what was it? It was like to just get the stadium fully publicly funded, and on the board, they just didn't have the votes.
Yeah, I actually saw the A's fan base is doing a reverse protest.
Yeah.
They're just all going to the game on the same day, every single person. And they all have shirts that say, sell the team, John Fisher, or whatever mean thing they can think of, which he should, because you should run a baseball organization like it's your fucking bank.
Yeah. John Fisher should sell the A's. Bob Castellini should sell the Reds. The list goes on. Because the Castellinis, they at least have the excuse of, and it's not even that big of an excuse. They at least have the, I guess, for lack of a better word, advantage of being the poorest owners in terms of overall net worth. Like Bob Castellini himself, he's worth a shade over $500 million.
Oh my God, how does he afford his bills?
I know, right? But yet the Reds, they're worth, I think, $1.2 billion, and he's running it on like a shoestring budget.
Yeah. I will say, you know, they did spend a little bit at the end of the 2010s when they went out and they got Trevor Bauer. And
well, that
they like tried.
That well, that's the problem with the Reds. If you go, I actually looked at this in the offseason. If you go back throughout their history, specifically post Marge Schott, they have their player development is good enough. Mm-hmm. The problem is
it's working out great now.
Yeah, the problem is their when it comes to free agency trades, guys are a little more expensive. They'll invest the money, and if desired results don't yield immediately, they hit the panic button, blow it up.
They definitely did do that when it was yeah. Trevor Bauer and Nick Castellanos.
Mike Moustakas.
They blew it up so fast. And in hindsight, like, what are you signing Mike Moustakas for? What were we thinking?
Juice balls, that's what.
Yeah.
Is he still on the Brewers or, like, wherever he got that minor league shot?
I know I saw him play maybe, like, 3 weeks ago. I don't remember who I was watching at the time. But I remember because it was Mike Moustakas, and I was like, he's still in the league? Like, I mean, good for him. Like, he's found a job. But, like, at his age, I figured it would be kind of a, all right, like, you're not really on the team, but we already signed you when you were good, so you're still, like, you're just a throw-in in a trade now to make the money work out.
Now, speaking of the Reds, because let's all assume all three of us are super psyched about Ellie De La Cruz, right?
Oh, he's so good.
What position does he play again?
He's a shortstop, but they're running him out at third. The Reds have too many infielders, just period. Yeah, not even middle infielders alone. I saw they had Jonathan India at DH the other night.
And apparently they're looking at moving Jonathan India already.
Okay. Yeah, I don't love that because what is he, 26?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, he's young. You got like 10 more good years of baseball out of him.
Yeah. All this being said, with Ellie De La Cruz and the Reds and all the complaining we're doing about the Yankees, what if in the next couple of years, Jason Dominguez shows up or Spencer Jones, whoever it is first, and hey, surprise, the Yankees are just winning like 105 a year just because like this is the guy sparking the team.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a spark.
Yeah.
I thought Volpe would be more of a spark, and it kind of like he didn't get off to a great start, and everyone's just kind of like, all right, we'll let him work through it and we'll kind of forget about it.
I was saying in spring training he should not be in the majors to start the
Ellie's
year.
Up right now, by the way, and ironically Jonathan India just struck out. Zach Greinke got him, and now it's Ellie.
What's the score?
It's 3-1 Kansas City.
All right.
Yeah, I love. Did you see the story about Zach Greinke the other day?
About
getting Joey Votto out?
Wait, remind me what that was.
Yeah, so he got asked about this situation that happened with him and Joey Votto like years and years ago. And it was like, I kind of just noticed that Votto picks up spin better than basically anyone. So I just started throwing him hanging sliders and he couldn't hit it. And he got Joey Votto out. And they're like good friends, so they were laughing about it. But Votto was going back to the dugout and be like, you motherfucker. Are you kidding me? You did that on purpose. I know you did, because I know you don't just spin breaking balls for the fun of it.
I do. Like, Zach Greinke, like, first off, hats off to him for just dealing with everything he has throughout his entire career with just, like, the absolute grace and dignity that
and just so doing many others whatever he have. Wants.
I'm telling you, when he is retired, his Instagram is going to be gold.
I'm the opposite. I say he doesn't even have a social media presence anymore. We just never see Zach Greinke again. And he like shows up in a local news story like, yeah, local Kansas City man saves dog from river. By the way, it's Zach Greinke.
I think that Zach Greinke, he might go the Adam out of Vino route, just a little more quieter about it, just take lots of cool pictures.
Yeah, I can see that. He just doesn't want to be bothered. He wants to do his thing alone, but he can post it.
I just want to point out, I am shocked I have not run into Adam Ottavino in my neighborhood yet, because his little personal pitching lab is, no lie, like 10-minute walk from my house.
Oh, I got a camp chair if you want to set up.
Nah, the guy's a 6'5" Italian who's from Brooklyn and now lives in New Jersey. Yeah. Although, Brooklyn boy voluntarily living in New Jersey, that's liable to make you lose lots of New Yorker points.
Yeah, I think Ellie got out, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, he struck out.
Anyway, yeah, sorry, folks. We haven't had a lot of Yankees talk today because, yeah, the Yankees are that bad. Like, okay, like, they're playing terribly. The Yankees are playing terribly. No, it's nobody's fault. The Yankees are playing terribly, and what are we supposed to do about it?
Right, and, let's just talk about Anthony Volpe.
Yeah, Anthony Volpe, look, I want to give the kid credit because he's decent in the field. Like, I'm not going to bang on him for the errors because he's 22. He's learning the position still. And the speed is there. But you could see it, and I'm going to sound like a hitting coach here. You can't always go for the big hit, where you're making an even bigger swing, trying to make the biggest contact. That's a recipe for strikeouts. We see Joey Gallo is still having this problem, even without the shift. Like, you can't be so all or nothing. And yeah, he's a good hard contact specialist, but also, like, with Volpe, and I'm talking about Volpe here, he can make hard contact, but he doesn't know what to do with it.
He's not making consistent hard contact either.
Yeah. Well, he whiffs so much right now. Right. That's his problem.
There's a weird... His approach is concerning in the sense that, like, when... The beginning of the season, even when he was having a low batting average, he was getting on base, he was working his walks, he was showing patience, and then he was wreaking havoc on the base paths. So he was creating some kind of value that went beyond the traditional stats, right?
Hitting the ball to all fields, too.
Yeah. He's moved away from that. And I get it. A young kid in the major leagues, like, he's pressing. No doubt about it. But, you know, it's just one of those things where he's got to take that step back and just simplify it. I'm like, what? In games 1 and 3 of the Red Sox series, he came up to the plate in a big situation.
Yeah.
And the situation looked too big for him. And it is frustrating because, like, I think he will be fine in the long run.
Yes. And Friday night, let's give him credit where it's due. He tripped at the finish line. He worked the count full. My wife was at the game. The guy came within, like, so few feet of the home run that, according to her, people were, like, throwing the beer up, celebrating.
It would have been a very different story about Anthony Volpe, but it shouldn't have been. Because he hits that home run, like, you also have to take a step back and be like, okay, I'm going to throw some numbers out at you guys. Ready?
Yeah.
He's a fastball hitter right now. That's the only thing he's hitting, and he's not even slugging that well on it. Slugging 427 on fastballs. Okay? Now, the big numbers are the whiffs. 32.7% on breaking balls and 38.3% on off speeds, change up, whatever. He's whiffing. And I'm pretty sure I said this last time when I came on with you guys. I think Anthony Volpe would have been much better served to start the year in AAA. I think that was obvious from day one because it wasn't about his talent level. It was about teaching him to play second base. Because that's the future that the Yankees see for him. They might tell him that he's a shortstop. They might tell the media that he's a shortstop, that he's their shortstop moving forward. But you have Peraza, who's actually a very good defensive shortstop, also young, cost-controlled, raking in AAA. They don't want to call him up because they don't want to raise his or lower his trade value by seeing him struggle against major league pitching. And Anthony Volpe doesn't have the arm for short. He's got an average shortstop's arm. Average.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Peraza's better. And I think we can all agree at some point the Yankees are going to be moving on from Gleyber Torres.
Don't tell that to the people on my Twitter. I said, like, hey, they're going to be moving on from him, and they came for me, like, immediately. Yeah,
there's no chance that they might play out the rest of Gleyber Torres's contract, but they're not going to outbid another team for him.
No. Like, they almost traded him for Pablo Lopez last year.
Yeah. And you know what? That ended up working out for the best. Pablo Lopez hasn't been very good lately.
And they paid him too.
Yeah. But no, it's just you have to, like, take a step back and admit, okay, Gleyber Torres, perfectly fine player for the Yankees over these past few years. He wasn't great. He wasn't terrible. He was really great sometimes, really terrible other times, but mostly a pretty consistent, slightly above average league hitter and a slightly below average league defender.
Yeah.
Generally at shortstop.
Oh my God. Like,
at second base, much better.
I almost, like, threw shit at the TV last night after what he did.
Yeah, that wasn't a good one. But he makes those mental errors all the time. And it's that's the part that you're supposed to have down. Like, with Anthony Volpe, when he boots a ground ball, you can look at him and be like, okay, like, it hit the lip of the grass or it skipped on him and he didn't adjust and make the play position. That other
He's
people
22.
Would make that play. Yeah. Other people make that play. Francisco Lindor makes that play. Peraza makes that play. Correa makes that play. Anthony Volpe doesn't make that play. Yeah.
Alec, here's a question I have for you about Volpe. Do you find often that, especially from a hitting standpoint, he tries to play bigger than he actually is?
I don't know if I'd say he tries to play bigger, but I think, well, actually, you know, maybe, yeah. Because I think he tries to be one version of a ball player that he doesn't need to be. Like, he needs to get back to that guy who will probably hit 270, 280 at the major league level and just steal a bunch of bases.
Yeah.
You know, he'll have pop. We know he has pop. Like, he's got 9 home runs on the year as a rookie. Like,
yeah.
You know, not for nothing. That's very impressive. You know, he's on pace for, you know, low 20s in home runs. Like,
yeah, cool. but what value do those home runs have if he's batting at or about the Mendoza line?
Well, exactly, right? Again, I think he's lost sight of what can make him such a valuable asset to the team. And, you know, and again, that's a kid playing for your hometown team. I get it. Like, he's
struggling too.
Yeah, struggling for your hometown.
Yeah, let's also point out that neither the fans nor media did him any favors by doing the instant Derek Jeter comparisons.
Yeah, but like, you know, I feel like at a certain point that fan bases and the masses do that so frequently now with anybody that it's now become devalued in and of itself, right?
All right, like, yeah, maybe.
Like whenever someone's like, oh, this dude's going to be the next – you know, Derek Jeter, it's like, okay, all right, bud. Yeah.
Yeah. Jason Dominguez, player comps, Mike Trout, Mickey Mantle, book
it. It's like, come on. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, no one really knew who Aaron Judge was when he came up. And then he struggled at the same level that Volpe is struggling, right?
He hit 179 in 2016. 179. Yeah. And it was over like 2 months.
Like a month and a half, 2 months.
Off the top of my head, I want to say like 35 to 40 range.
Yeah, I want to think it was somewhere maybe even higher than 40.
Yeah, but I remember going into 2017 thinking like I wanted Aaron Hicks to be the starting right fielder, not because I didn't believe in Judge, but I was like, he didn't get off to a good start. Like, let him work in AAA a little bit longer. Don't throw him into this weird potential platooning situation. And then he ended up getting robbed of an MVP. My bad. Hand up.
I'm going to use this time right now to say that I called Judge from the moment he was drafted, so suck my dick.
All right.
Yeah. So I saw him. He's like, well, like, I remember just seeing, okay, 6'7", like 270, can play all three outfield positions. I will be watching. Like, what's the Alec? What's the line from Star Wars? I'll be watching whatever.
We'll be watching your career with great interest.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt about Aaron Judge, and sure enough, here we are today.
Yeah, so like, you know, at the end of the day, we make these stupid comparisons when in actuality we have no idea what the product in front of us is going to end up being. And that's the great thing. For anyone who's concerned about Anthony Volpe, you can just look at the current Yankee captain and be like, hey, look, he struggled big time and he just broke the home run record. And honestly, if he was healthy this year, he probably could do it again.
Yeah. I think the most important thing about Volpe too is that I haven't seen anyone saying he's a bust. This is just, it was too early. It was too early for him to be here. He'll be better served if he goes back down to AAA, gets some confidence back in him. Better served. No one wants to get rid of him.
And that's also where in a rare moment I'm going to tip my cap to me, because they drove home the point when he came up. It was like, hey, limited AAA experience, be prepared. Mm-hmm. So now everyone's seeing him struggle, and they're like, okay, he needs to go back to the minors. Looking at the schedule as to when that should happen, I mean, if it were up to me, he'd be on his way to Scranton right now. I think more realistically, they'll probably bench him against Scherzer tomorrow, because I wouldn't want to put a rookie kid out there against Max Scherzer. Are you kidding me? Probably give him they'll probably give him more of a shot against Verlander on Wednesday.
I think I'd rather face Max Scherzer than Justin Verlander.
Yeah, but Justin Verlander's more likely to make a mistake with a dead red fastball with a rookie. That's true. Kind of what you need.
Yeah. I mean, Scherzer throws plenty of fastballs too.
Yeah.
It's a different arm angle. I feel like it would be a more comfortable. It's odd that one would say this, but I feel like Verlander would be the more comfortable at bat.
Yeah. He's a little more traditional, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's just I feel like it would be easier to pick up. But then again, we're talking about two first ballot Hall of Famers, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who do you want to face? Justin Verlander or Max Scherzer? I got to pick one of them. Like, those are the only options.
Can I choose my dad?
I hope he strikes you out.
Anyway, so Volpe. Okay, so the Yankees, they got two against the Mets, then the day off, then it's the weekend at Fenway, and they got the Monday off, and then the Mariners come to visit us. I think that if Volpe is not on the path to at least minimal improvement by the end of the Fenway series, that's when Brian Cashman should, keyword being should, send him down and then call up, I don't know, Peraza, some other guy, maybe give Ozzie Cabrera some reps at shortstop. By the way, this is just a reminder, Oswaldo Cabrera is Donny Rojas, and nobody can tell me any different. Baseball is life.
You know, I heard an interesting thing about Oswaldo Cabrera.
What's
and
that?
It's that his big problem this year is that he's gotten better at hitting, but now he's not whiffing on pitches that he used to whiff on. He's making bad contact on them.
Yeah. It's oh God.
But he's like getting better at like picking up pitches and hitting them where they're going to be. But it's just like, it's worse off. He's worse off for it.
It's so heartbreaking watching Oswaldo Cabrera hit, especially from the left side of the plate. Because on so many pitches, especially the ones he pops up, you can tell I'm making a hand gesture here. He is this close. He is this close.
Yeah. I'm gonna look up contact rates now.
Yeah.
We're in the deep dives.
I'm looking at Oswaldo Cabrera, and dare I say it, I'm seeing shades of almost Didi Gregorius, where you're not, instead of having the strikeouts, you still have that long swing, but you're kind of toppling the ball or popping it up instead of just keeping it more level through the zone.
Yeah, so this year, let's go 2022. Last year, 30% ground ball rate. This year, 51%.
Yeah,
that's not great.
That ain't gonna cut it. That ain't gonna cut it.
What's his what about hard versus soft contact?
I haven't found that yet, but here it is. The whiff percentages. You look at by pitch. Let's even just go by say change. The fastball is pretty similar, but changeup 2023. He's whiffing 19.4% of the time. Last year, 38.3%.
Okay,
he
so
basically cut that in half. But he's hitting more ground balls because of it.
All right, so okay, so they set him down in the minors for the right reason. It's a swing mechanics issue. His pitch recognition is pro. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, when push came to shove, his pitch recognition might have been amongst the best on the team.
Yeah, hard hit rate, pretty consistent. Last year, 25.7 K rate, and this year, 19.8. So, again, striking out less, also walking less, 8.8 to 5.6.
Yeah.
And the barrel rate, that's the big one. Last year was 6.3, which is, you know, nothing to write home about, 6.3 barrel rate. But it's, you know, for a rookie, you can see, okay, there's something to build on here. This year, 4.6.
Barrel rate, I will say, is a bit of a flawed stat, though, just because that's just judging if you hit a ball like 95 miles per hour or harder.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know.
But again, the hard hit rate itself is pretty much the same. And he's just the average exit velocity is up, but it's going on the ground.
Yeah. So he just has to fix his swing by like that little smidge. Like Max Greenfield sees it too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
and Max is probably the one who even told me that about he's just not whiffing as much and it's worse for him.
That's a great thing about these kids, though, where their struggles are relative, like they're pretty easy to fix. Like I use that term lightly, easy to fix, because the talent is there. They just have to make these minor tweaks and adjustments. And I think once they do that, then everything is going to unlock for them.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like they are so close to like putting it all together. It's just going to be a matter of patience. You know,
but we haven't had that in a while. Like I'm thinking maybe Clint Frazier was the last prospect that came up that everybody like expected from minute number one. This guy's going to be a very good player. And it just, it obviously didn't work out for Clint Frazier, but I don't think he ever really changed anything in his swing, even post concussion. He was just trying to hit the ball as hard as he could. And
I mean,
Brian Cashman liked that he whiffed a lot because he wasn't making bad contact.
I mean, also in defense of Clint Frazier, like just reading up on his concussion and talking to like neurologists, he had Clint Frazier's concussion. It's like the absolute last concussion you ever want to have. It's called a vestibular concussion. And it's apparently, even though you may recover from the concussion itself, every so often, like, okay, migraines are going to show up. You're going to have you're going to have a stiff neck. Like you're going to have this, you're going to have that. So much to the point where Kaylee has him on a anti-inflammatory diet.
Yeah. That's like Brandon Drury. Remember we found out he got migraines and was just blind at the plate?
Yeah.
It ruined his career, that concussion. Like I believed in Clint Frazier for a long time. I thought he was great, and he showed those flashes. And then he was never the same again after the concussion. But, like, everything he did was the same physically. Like, his swing was pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. Maybe he closed it off or opened it up a little bit, depending on what he was trying to work on, what he was trying to improve. But overall, he didn't really make any of those substantive changes that, like, Oswaldo Cabrera needs to make, where he needs to actually change his swing to have success.
And yeah, you have to hope that he's still young enough that he will get there. Dylan Lawson, despite the team's run, I still think he's a great hitting coach for this team.
Yeah.
It's just, I just wish that when this team slumped, guys, they didn't slump so goddamn fucking ugly.
I feel like it's the constant year after year, either the pitching or the hitting is going at one given time, never both.
Yeah, and just for how bad it is, I did the math on this. LeMahieu, Stanton, Rizzo, and Donaldson hit a combined 138 against the Red Sox with no Aaron Judge in the lineup.
The Red Sox don't even have good pitchers.
They don't have good pitchers. Their hitters are overachieving. I said this in the takeaways. The Red Sox are built perfectly to play spoiler. And as long as Alex Cora... Alec, you were saying this the other day. As long as Alex Cora is managing that team, they're going to punch above their weight. They're going to steal wins from not just the AL East, from everyone in baseball. And the Yankees, like without Aaron Judge, they have no answer for it.
Because that's a Red Sox team who has a manager getting them to play for fucking pride. You know that they like that's a manager who's going to get his team up against the Yankees, that they're like, hey, we're going to come into this stadium and we're going to take 2 out of 3 and we're going to shut up these Yankee fans and we're going to prove that no matter what the standings say and no matter where our organizations are at, that we have their number. And it's just so frustrating as a Yankee fan to watch the Yankees come in so lifeless.
Against Garrett fucking Whitlock and Tanner Houck.
Yeah,
I like Garrett Whitlock as a reliever, especially, but I don't know. I think he's got potential as a starter.
You never want to let – it's always a bad look when in less than a month you let Kyle Gibson and Garrett Whitlock, these two not-so-special, dinky little pissant sinker-throwing pitchers, who like – and their sinkers aren't even that good.
The worst part, next week's on the road, too. Like, we just lost 2 or 3 at home. Now we got to go on the road to Boston.
Yeah, and right after the Subway Series too. This is just fucking great.
Yeah, well, at least the Mets suck too.
Yeah, and then we'll make them look like the Yokohama Bay Stars or whoever won the Japan Series last year.
We could do a whole nother hour on the Mets right now. I'll talk about the Mets all night.
I don't want to talk about the Mets. I hate the Mets. They're just the Mets.
I've been watching a lot of Mets games this year, kind of like accidentally, just the way they're timing out with Yankee games, like, over the last month, one's been on the West Coast, one's been on the East Coast, just got the cable on the one TV, so it's either Yankees or Mets.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot.
Yeah, well, yeah, get your daily dose of Gary, Keith, and Ron.
Yeah, and I'm in love with Kodai Senga's forkball. In love with it. It's beautiful, so pitch. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gary, the Phillies have been having a resurgence, so that's been a little fun.
How about Ben Davis being a science denialist? And going out in the bad air in Philly.
Wait, what?
Okay, so So Ben Davis, one of the Phillies commentators on TV, during the whole like air quality thing from the Canadian wildfires, he was like, "Oh, this is nothing. Like everyone's a pussy. I'm out here throwing with my son, and it's beautiful out."
Oh, Jesus Christ!
That's not safe.
No,
no.
Dude, oh no! You want to hear like some crazy shit?
Yeah.
The day where it was at its worst. So like, you know,
when the sky was orange. Yes.
Yeah. So when the sky was orange for you guys, the day after is when all that shit came down to us in Philly.
And then you lost I-95 too. It's been a rough week up here.
Dude, oh my goodness. My girlfriend said, cracked a joke. She was like, we've been getting, cause we also just had a crazy thunderstorm with flood warnings. But like, we've been getting like the Avatar and the Last Airbender, like four elements of disaster. Oh, yeah. We've had air. We've had the fire that collapsed I-95 and then flooding.
I don't know if I told you guys this story last time I was out here, what? But I did a story when I was in Binghamton. I did a story about roundabouts because somebody called into a Pennsylvania television station and said, "Oh, we didn't used to get tornadoes before we put in the roundabouts. And now, you know, the air goes round and round and round and then it creates the tornado. Now we get tornadoes." So I did a whole story.
Very specifically on tornadoes.
Tornadoes. Yes. Yeah. So I did a whole story on it. Binghamton hated it. They didn't like it. They didn't think it was very funny because they also hate roundabouts for different reasons. But all I'm saying is it seems like natural disasters are hitting Pennsylvania a lot lately.
Oh, yeah.
So just watch those roundabouts. Watch those Canadian wildfires. Don't drive on any highways.
Well, you know, just for anyone out there who are big Greek mythology nerds like myself, I've been calling Philadelphia the Thebes of the New World.
The Thebes. Oof.
So I'm just waiting for a Sphinx to, you know, settle onto the Xfinity Tower and start speaking over the city. If that happens, then we know we're really fucked.
Yeah.
So wait. So was that like the crazy shit that happened?
Oh no. So the day where the air quality was at its worst, I'm talking 400.
Oh shit. Okay.
I'm driving to work into New Jersey. Yeah. And there were people outside running along the river, getting their morning cardio in. And I'm sitting there in the car with a goddamn N95 mask on. I'm like, what the hell are these people doing?
Yeah. Just insane behavior. Just insane.
Buddy of mine lives in or near, I don't know, like the Allentown area in Pennsylvania. And he's got this like beautiful like two-story house with a deck. It's just him and his two dogs. He's like done real well for himself. So he's got this weird like space age air filter or whatever you want to call it in his living room that somehow is so advanced that even though it's running in the living room, it kind of advances to the rest of the house gradually. Yeah. He posted to his Instagram story a screenshot from the app he uses for this. Apparently the AQI directly outside his house was like between 350 and 400. Inside his house, the air quality index was 50.
That is awesome.
Wow. Yeah. I was like, Travis, you bitch.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Party at his house next time.
Yeah, seriously.
My friend has a cabin out in Pennsylvania in the Harrisburg and Mechanicsville type area.
Oh yeah, like that's smack dab in the middle of nowhere. Yeah,
there's a lot of Amish people, a lot of Mennonites, and they don't do the internet. So I was sitting there thinking, like, what's going through their minds today when they just like woke up and all of a sudden the sky was orange and they like the newspapers don't have it yet. What do they think?
So here's the funny part, or the answer to that rather. There's a farmer's market near our house. And there's an Amish guy who sells like cheese and bacon and eggs and all that other delicious goodness there. So apparently that farm, they just send people to all the adjacent cities to like New York, Philly, like wherever in Jersey is close by. And so they probably just driving to the market because like he drives like this big old truck. So I'm guessing they just kind of relay what's going on.
Yeah.
From there,
just word of mouth.
Yeah, pretty much.
Word of mouth doesn't get there early, man. I have to imagine there was a good half hour, full hour, maybe, where they were just kind of sitting there like,
it's not the end times, Ezekiel. It's just Canadian wildfires.
I mean, Jeremiah, still might
you
be.
Know, that city down south smells like brimstone.
Amish people do not have southern accents.
Yeah, well, you know, makes things funnier.
Alec, everything is shaving the mustache, doing the Amish look yourself.
I wouldn't.
I've envisioned it, but I've never been like, I want to do it. I was like, that would look pretty funny. I'm not going to do it. And then I
yeah.
That's something you do when you plan on shaving your whole beard and you're like, yeah. let me try mutton chops first.
Yeah.
Let me just see what they look like.
Oh, believe me. If I could grow a passable beard, I would have so many weird looks with it.
There's a picture of me floating around somewhere with like a dangly soul patch. I had like a really long beard at the time. And one day I was like, listen, like it's getting kind of hot. I'm going to shave the beard. But yeah. As I was doing it, like I was walking out to our living room with actually Rob, who started this podcast with me,
yeah.
And his now wife, Tori, I would shave a little bit and I'd walk out and be like, what do you guys think? And I'd be like, I think you should probably keep going. And then eventually pictures started getting taken. And one of them was a little soul patch. That was the last one. That's all I had left.
Yeah. What did the dad think of the beard?
The what?
Yeah, your Fox News watching father. What do you think of the beard?
Oh, I never found out.
Damn.
Yeah, I just do me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yep, do us. Sorry, like I'm just like fiddling around with this toy right here. This is one of my kids' toys. We're going to wrap up soon, folks, I promise. And this is legit like one of those little squeeze frogs, and for some reason there's like these little rainbow like balls in it. She'll mess with this thing for hours.
I would too. That looks like fun.
I was gonna say, I think it's working on you, Josh.
Oh yeah, yes, it really is.
Josh got his kid a fidget spinner, and he's like, "Let me give this thing a try."
Oh god! Oh my god! You remember when Alex Jones posted that video with the fidget spinner dancing around or whatever?
No. But in fairness, I've seen a lot of crazy shit online, so that's like halfway up the list.
Yeah, it's just a video. He just has like this little light up fidget spinner. He's just having so much fun with it. It's
just overtaken by joy.
It makes sense, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so the Yankees, they have not been playing well. You can only hope they're going to get out of this funk at some point. Upside, Harrison Bader should be back by the Red Sox series. Certainly trending that way. Hopefully he can spark us with a triple, a great catch, maybe both. Guys, got anything to add?
I see a 1-4 week. I see the Mets taking both games with Verlander and Scherzer, and I see the Red Sox taking 2 or 3 again. Is that good math? Well, yeah, 1-4. That's 5 games. I knew that.
Oof.
It's not a good outlook. It's not bright. I like it bright.
I'm going to try and be optimistic here. I am going to roll with they'll split the Mets series.
I'll take it.
Yeah, they'll go 2-3.
Okay, we're just gonna play 500 ball until Aaron Judge comes back. And all we can do is hope that we don't fall too far out of the wild card standings.
And
it's not
that,
like we have any AL Central teams to worry about. So it's really just our division and the West.
See, my friend who I mentioned earlier at the before we hit record talking about the Band of Brothers haircut. We'll tell that story later.
Oh, did I mention on air yet that Josh had a ponytail at one point in his life? Was that did I bring that up at the start of the podcast? Because I meant to.
I don't even know if you could call it a ponytail. It was like rat tail masquerading as a ponytail is probably terminology.
You look like a young Jedi Padawan.
I was just thinking that.
Wars Anakin with a little braid.
Dude, guys, here's how pathetic that ponytail was. I wasn't even a Jedi Padawan. I was the guy who ran the Jedi Padawan goat check. That's how bad it is.
Oh my god.
That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
But
you're the creepy Jedi Temple security guard that all the kids are weirdly cool with.
Yeah. I Order 66 happened and I was like, yeah, fuck them kids, I'm out of here. Anyway, this is my friend Tim, who's from Minnesota, now currently lives in Minnesota. I'm looking forward to another playoff sweep against the Twins this fall. It won't matter who they play. It's going to be bad. They don't look like a playoff team. I'm going to write back. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but have you seen the Yankees over the last week.
This is riveting radio.
It is riveting radio.
I can't wait for people to listen to this tomorrow and be like, yes, let's read along with Josh's tweet from 12 hours ago.
That was from Friday night. Even worse.
Oh, man, well, yeah. A little distance. Got to go back in the timeline. Got
to
find
it. Well, look, hey, we were supposed to record last week, but then the sky literally exploded in flame. And then Alec had to go to yet another Phillies game.
Hey, man, three this past week.
Have you at least bought the Trey Turner jersey yet?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been wearing it. I like to personally think I've been the reason for his turnaround.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw Trey hit a home run a couple weeks ago, so I was wondering if he was still going on the upswing.
Well, like, so on Monday he hit two, and then he had, like, four hits that game altogether, and then he had two hits yesterday.
Yeah, saw Castellanos home run the day the bridge collapsed.
Yeah, yep, I was at that game. But anyway, you want to talk about sports radio personalities with asinine takes. I remember at like 2 weeks ago hearing the sports radio guy, the local guy going like, if I could go back and do,
Is it like WIP, WPI, whatever it's called?
WIP
sounds right.
Yeah. Sorry, Kevin.
I might've applied to a job there once or twice. I probably did. I've applied to everything.
Yeah.
But he goes, if I could go back and do it again, I would not give that contract to Trey Turner. What a waste of money. Jesus Christ. We're 2 months in.
Relax. See, that's what I'm talking about. We got all these smart people out here who know things, and they're not the ones on the radio or working for The Athletic because nobody is anymore.
Nope. God, I emailed Kavitha Davidson gave me when she was still at The Athletic. Sal's shout out. Got to shout out to Sal's Pizza, Sal and Carmine Pizza, and Absolute Bagels, too. Anyway, so...
I can only vouch for Sal's. That's the only reason I know Kavitha.
Yeah,
you besides actual work stuff.
Yeah, you missed that. You missed out on Absolute Bagels. That place is the truth. Mm. Anyway, she gave me her her editor's email at The Athletic. I emailed him a pitch for like a series of stories I wanted to do that I thought during prime athletic would have been great. And he wrote back. He's like,
this is post New York Times.
This was 2021. So
I was probably right around the time they sold. I think
it was either right before or right after New York Times. Yeah. And he just said, hey, do you have a resume I can look at? I sent it over and never heard back from him again.
Lazy.
All three of us are literally to bring this full circle. We are kicking the door down trying to get in, but it's reinforced steel.
Yeah, reinforced by morons.
Rob Manfred approved steel.
I'm not going to do the Chris Russo thing. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it to myself.
I'm
not
going to
get mad.
Do it. Do it.
Nope. I'm not going to get mad.
We want mad
Chris Russo
Kelly.
Doesn't watch baseball. He doesn't watch the games.
It's so obvious.
He gets his little producer notes in the morning. He checks AP News, says, oh, okay, I see that, Yeah. He doesn't watch fucking games.
No.
He's the worst.
And he's on MLB Network. MLB Network. Not ESPN, not First Take, although he goes on First Take a lot. And guess what? Stephen A. Smith is smarter than him.
And that's saying something.
It's crazy.
You know you're the asshole in the room when Stephen A. Smith looks that much better by comparison.
Yeah, come on. Like, Stephen A.'s whole thing is just being reactionary and wrong.
Screaming A. Smith.
That's how Skip Bayless and Stephen A. made it happen. First Take was lit back in, like, 2013. Like, that was a great show, not because the takes were good, but because it was like, whoa. Like, we haven't seen this before where it's actually just, like, brawling in the studio, and now everyone fucking does that.
Yeah, because it's all about ratings. You got to keep the 24-hour machine going.
I hate it.
All right. We need to stop, guys. We're sorry to end on a sour note here, but yeah, please. If you made it this far, God bless you.
I once did a 2-hour episode with Dillard Barnhart. Dillard. I always accidentally call him Dylan, but when I interviewed him right before I went to Binghamton, we did literally 2 hours.
Remind me who Dillard Barnhart is again.
He posts all the clips on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. The highlight reels and stuff.
There you
go. Good dude. He's a good dude. But yeah, right. There's no time limit on this thing, Josh. You just want to go to bed.
Well, I also, wait, no, I'm gonna show you guys the, I don't just want to go to bed. I actually have to write something up tonight. Ooh. And yeah, we'll part with this. I went and had the Anthony Rizzo sandwich at my friend's restaurant today.
Was here, good?
You see for yourself right there.
Ooh,
that does look.
Now I can't look at that, dude. I've been on a diet. I've been exercising every day. I can't look at that right now. I don't need to see it. I don't need to. You know what I had tonight? Grilled chicken and celery. That's what I have for dinner tonight. And you're showing me pictures of that.
Oh, wait. Here, hold on here. Just from another angle.
Nah, stop that. Stop that.
I haven't even told you what it is yet.
I can. I don't know if the mic can even pick. If I put the mic down here, you might be able to hear my stomach grumbling.
No,
you might be able to hear it.
No, that is a vodka meatball parm. I'm sorry. Specifically a spicy vodka meatball parm.
Oh, I've never wanted a heart attack so bad in my life.
Oh, and Alex, to answer your question, I also made a full Italian feast last weekend.
Yeah,
so pretty much to answer your question, I did a sake marinated flank steak, linguine with, oh, and I roasted some, I put some cherry tomatoes on top of that too, so it was extra good. I made linguine with what I'm calling a rainbow tomato sauce. I made spring onion greens fried up with some pancetta, and then I had broccoli rabe and garlic scapes.
Oh man.
It's now a cooking podcast. Chef Josh.
Just remember pineapple doesn't belong on pizza. All right. Good night.
There we go. No pineapple on pizza. We got there that.
There is a time and place for Hawaiian pizza.
No, and it's never.
You are both, oh my god, I can't stand you two.
We have taste.
We are men of culture.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. It says the guy who likes Thin Mints.
Dude, you said you wanted to wrap it up, man. And you're just setting me up like that. You're just setting me up to go on the Thin Mints rant. And you were like, we're going to wrap it up here in just a minute. By the way, James likes Thin Mints more than every other cookie. They got almost 50% head-to-head. Thin Mints or any other cookie. Thin, we were almost at 50%.
I'll say it before and I'll say it again. Thin Mints took the popular vote and the tagalongs rightfully won the Electoral College.
Yeah, that's why we have to get rid of the Electoral College.
Well, look, if we got, yeah, well, at the same time, we don't want people to eat cardboord.
Well, it tastes delicious. So,
well, mint and chocolate's okay, the best combination okay, great. That's ever so, so we have it on record. James Kelly enjoys eating cardboard. The only reason he's not living outside in a box is because he ate his box. There we go. Moving on, that's the end of the show, folks. Thank you so much, James. Thanks for coming on. We will see you in a couple of weeks.
I feel attacked.
Yeah, you should.